Rookies, Dave Consolazio here alongside Kevin KT Taylor for week 14 of NFL Beyond the Numbers. KT, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, sir. How about yourself?
Pretty good, other than the fact that I'm still feeling a lot of guilt about last week. We recorded a podcast, yeah. And this is one of those things that if we hadn't have recorded a podcast, this is probably what we'd say. That yeah. We'd recorded a podcast, there were technical difficulties, but no, I flat out ruined yeah. The podcast.
All your
but
fault.
Here's the thing, it was 100% my fault, but here's the thing, I can personally guarantee that we didn't do it again, because if they're hearing this,
yeah.
It worked!
There you go.
So, that must mean it's worked. Solved. That must mean we're broadcasting this, so that's fantastic. So, let's get into our topic of the week, which there's all sorts of things to talk about in the NFL with just a month in the regular season left, but what better time to start trying to narrow down our MVP candidates than
yeah, you know, we were trying to figure it out, and there were a lot of options. We were thinking about maybe doing the NFC because there's some tight races, but you know, the Bears and the Packers play next week. There's a few other ones. San Francisco plays New England. There's some great matchups. I thought maybe we would just talk about, as you said, the MVP races. We each have our top five. We'll say one player at a time and say where we have them. For me, my number five guy, I'll start. I have Calvin Johnson, Megatron, for the simple fact that he has 1,428 receiving yards, which is 300 more than anybody else in the NFL right now. The next closest person has 1,100. I'm not bothered by his limited touchdowns. He only has five on the season, but if you've watched him, I think he's been stopped within the five-yard line on a big gain, maybe at least three times, if not more. A big thing for me, also with Calvin, he's top five in catches, but he has 29 plays of 20 yards or more. The next closest person has 22. So he has the huge breakaway ability there. We're talking about valuable here. And outstanding, and I think that without Calvin Johnson, that the Lions would be absolutely atrocious this year. Maybe have only won two games.
Right, but they're 4-8. I mean, what he's without question the best wide receiver in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about MVP, yes, he's the most valuable player on the team, but they are already atrocious, aren't they? It's not.
I mean, they made the playoffs last year.
Right, and but this year they're 4-8.
But they've been in.
They've had some very games. Close games. Yeah. But I don't know. It's tough because the built-in criteria. This is similar to the Heisman discussion, where the Heisman Trophy is very rarely about who the best player in college football is. Mm-hmm. It's who the best player in college football on a team that accomplished a lot is. So I think NFL MVP also comes down to that, but it's a good fifth spot, you know, for a guy to give respect to a guy that's the best at his position. I mean, that makes sense, but I just, I don't know. I don't know if if anybody on a 4-8 team, because I'm saying even Adrian Peterson, I have trouble.
Well, then you won't like where I have him.
I have trouble putting him too high on my list because of where the Vikings are at right now, but that's fine.
Let me ask you a question. My list is
basically all quarterbacks. Because MVP, if you actually look at the MVP trophy, I'm going based on accepted standard is,
let me ask you this.
A winning team, and it has to be a quarterback, maybe a running back every now and then. Quarterback, okay. Winning team.
Okay, there's a guy who I don't have on my list that I'm sure is probably on everybody's list, and that's Matt Ryan. Where do you have Matt Ryan?
Matt Ryan is actually really tough for me. I have him right around the 5-6 spot because it gets a little hazy for me. I'll package my 4, 5, and 6, if you can help me out with that. Because I have Matt Ryan. This is my bottom tier here, and there's nothing bottom about 4, 5, and 6 MVP race, but I have Matt Ryan for obvious reasons. I have Robert Griffin III, again, fairly obvious reasons.
I have him higher, but okay.
And that is a perfectly valid place to put him, wherever you have him. And I like Ray Rice in this area as well.
Okay.
And now, I have trouble ranking them. I would actually probably have Matt Ryan right outside of that if I had to put him in spot. I might not have him in my top five, so I'm with you there, simply because they have other weapons. The tricky part is with the Falcons, though, their running game isn't that great.
True.
It is him running things, and it is an 11-1 team, so it's tough to argue against Matt Ryan not being up there, but the rest of the guys on the list are so exceptional.
I think the big thing for me with Matt Ryan, the reason he's on my list, is because he's a great quarterback, but I have trouble believing that with Roddy White, Julio Jones, and Tony Gonzalez, that guys like Matt Stafford and Jay Cutler and other people wouldn't be able to be on this team and put up a 10-2 record with the weapons that he has.
Yeah, but I don't know if a Jay Cutler is doing it without coughing up a game here or
that's
there
fair.
Either. You know, that's a tricky thing. But you're right. That's the problem that with a lot of these guys is that the supporting cast around them is so good that mm-hmm. it's hard to, you know, just give one guy credit. But that's what makes some of the other guys on this list so impressive. A guy like RG3, who, you know, and his fellow rookie, Alfred Morris, is having a great year too. But this is a team that, as well as Andrew Luck, we've seen what they are without these guys and then what they become with these guys. But I actually, where do you have Aaron Rodgers?
Aaron Rodgers isn't even in my list.
Mine neither. And they, here's
it's
a guy
surprising.
Who's,
he won it last year easily.
He won it last year easily, and since they got off their 2-3 start, which should have been a 3-2 start, with not for that Seattle game, Green Bay's been on a roll, with the exception of that. What is now looking even more bizarre, that Giants loss.
Yeah, I don't really know.
Putting that aside, that they've been on an absolute roll. Rodgers looked great. Not on my list because, again, with all the talent on this list this year, it's tough. But this, so that's my bottom-ish guys.
Okay.
Let's climb up your list.
Yeah, number four, I have Tom Brady. It's hard to not have him on this list here. He's fifth in the year in passing rating, only has four interceptions, which is tied with RG3 and Big Ben for most among starting quarterbacks. Of course, Ben has missed the past couple weeks, so that's a little skewed, but still very impressive by them. But the thing about Brady is the reason he's only number four on this list for me is that as great as he is, he's overmatched in every statistical category by the guy who have it number one, which we'll get to in a bit. But just statistically wise, he's less on that than my number one. In addition to the fact that Brady, of course, has so many weapons with Wes Welker and Gronkowski and Hernandez, who, of course, he makes better. There's no question about that. But, you know, you would expect a guy maybe like Brandon Lloyd to come in and have a huge year in this offense. He's done okay, but not great. I know maybe he just doesn't necessarily fit in there. But because Brady has so many weapons and because he's lesser on the stats, I have him at number four, even though I could easily argue him, of course, as having top three. Where do you have him?
Yeah, I've got Brady at two.
Okay.
And spoiler alert, I've got the same guy at one, and spoiler alert, you guys might be able to figure out who it is.
Yeah.
If not, maybe this is the wrong podcast for you, but we'll get to him later. Brady, the thing about him, you're right, he has great weapons. I mean, the two tight ends are both freaks, and there's just a lot of guys that work in that system. The thing that works against Brady is that one year that he went down and Matt Castle comes in and leads the team to an 11-win season, It was a different team back then. They actually played defense back then. When you look at the Patriots before last week, when they only scored 23 against Miami, they were actually on pace to score more points than the 2007 version of themselves, which I didn't hear anybody talking about.
No,
considering that was the best offense since the 1950 Rams, so the best offense in modern day NFL history, for the Patriots to be on that pace at about 36 points per game is just a testament to how good this guy is. And you brought up a great point about Matt Ryan. Take a handful of very good quarterbacks. We're not talking about Mark Sanchez's. We're talking about very good quarterbacks. Put them in the Falcons system. They could probably, I don't think much of anybody can do what Tom Brady does.
I agree.
And that's why when you talk about most valuable, for what this team needs to be now, with its passing defense being what it is, it needs to be this team that can put up 30, 40, and that might be vulnerable in the playoffs. It wasn't last year.
Yeah.
Got him to the Super Bowl. He's two for me. So.
Yeah, and then my third guy I mentioned earlier, Adrian Peterson for me is number three. Again, we're just talking about the value that he has on this team, and statistically wise, just like Calvin Johnson, it's pretty funny how they're the exact same. 1,446 rushing yards for Adrian Peterson, 300 more than anybody else in the league, just like Calvin Johnson. Amazingly, this guy looks better this year than he did last year, despite the horrific knee injury that he had. I've never seen someone recover this quickly and this well from an ACL, a torn ACL and torn MCL. Specifically, the ACL, of course, is the one death injury-wise for an NFL running back. You're just never the same, or any player, but specifically a running back who relies on their cuts. But Peterson's just there, and he's better than ever. I mean, just last week, you look at the 82-yard touchdown run he had against Green Bay. Horrible tackling by Green Bay. But the fact that he makes those kind of plays. Now, you know, Minnesota was hot in the beginning of the season. They've fallen off. They're 6-6.
And they've had to deal with injuries.
They have. And they're still in the wild card race, but nobody really gives them that, especially with Percy Harvin now for the season. But I just think because of what Peterson has done this year, any other season, he'd have the comeback of the year award locked up in week 5. He might not even win that this year because of the guy who's number one. I know we're trying to keep it a secret here, but I have Peterson at 3 just because of the stats and the impact he's had after such a horrific injury. I think he has to be on this list for me.
Okay, and so I think I covered it with Calvin Johnson that basically for me criteria wise it just comes down to what is the team doing. I'll put it this way. Every single team has a most valuable player or two or three guys that can qualify to be called that, other than maybe the Raiders. But most teams have a couple guys you can call MVP or one very specific one. He is obviously that for Minnesota. So for me, I can't put him in the top 5 on a team that's not going to make the playoffs when there are 12 teams that are going to make the playoffs. You know, for what Pittsburgh has looked like over the last few weeks, I might put Ben Roethlisberger up there just because you see what the difference this team is with and without him. But so you were saying you had RG3 higher. Is he in your 2 spot?
He is my number 2, yeah.
So, obviously, wherever you put him, there's absolutely no question the impact he has on the game.
Because you just think about how terrible this team was last year. And this pretty much, if you look at the Redskins team, it's the exact opposite argument of what we have for Matt Ryan, where you put him in and you have these star wide receivers. RG3 has had garbage to work with all season long. Pierre Garçon's just now getting back to being healthy and he's looking good. He had Fred Davis for the first 6 weeks. He was out since then. Other than that, who has he had to throw the ball to? Leonard Hankerson? I mean, and of course, RG3 is getting a ton of help from Alfred Morris, and that can't be overlooked, of course. But the fact that...
But that also can't be discounted how much he opens that up.
Exactly. And this team is 6-6, and unlike the Vikings, this team is very much in the wild card race. And forget the wild card, look at the division.
I'd say that's even more likely.
Absolutely. And the fact that he's making this type of impact... On this season, and I know this doesn't really have anything to do with the MVP specifically, but just the fact that he's gotten Redskins fans back, and they have something to look at again, and he seems to be a great community guy, just an all-around, like, absolute star on and off the field for RG3, and the fact that he's doing so well, it makes me really happy. He's third in the league in pass rating. He has a stat to back it up. Just outside the top 20 in rushing yards, 23 total touchdowns on the season, and just like Brady, as I mentioned before, this is probably the most impressive thing about RG3, 4 interceptions on the season.
Okay, so agree with everything you just said. There's nothing to disagree with. The guy is sensational. He's going to be a star in the league for years to come. I don't think he's going to have the sophomore slump that Newton's having right now. He's something else. My question has to be, with all of those words about Robert Griffin III, how are you finding spots for Adrian Peterson and Calvin Johnson in your top 5? Where's Andrew Luck?
That's fair. I mean, Andrew Luck, if you look at the statistics...
4 fourth quarter comebacks.
Yeah.
You take a team that had 2 wins last year, quadruple that with 4 games left in the season. I've got him at 3. He's going to take the Colts to the playoffs 1 year after he gets drafted first overall.
Yeah.
It's unprecedented, even by the standards we've talked about as far as rookie quarterbacks go. Washington was a 5-win team last year.
Yeah.
From the looks of it, let's say they finish 8-8. So they've improved 3 wins. Mm-hmm. Luck is going to improve this team 8 wins. And he's got even less to work with than Griffin III does.
And he has Reggie Wayne.
He does have Reggie Wayne.
He has a top 5 receiver this
Griffin
year in Reggie
has
Wayne.
He has Santana Moss. He also has Alfred Morris.
You can't even compare Santana Moss to Reggie Wayne this year.
Where is the Colts' Alfred Morris?
That's true, they don't have that, but they have a guy who's a top 5 in receiving in every category. How can you say he has nobody to throw
okay,
to?
Okay, but why? I didn't say, yeah, okay, fair enough. But one of the reasons he is in the top 5 in every category would be the quarterback.
Of course, and I'm not saying that Luck has anything to do with that. That's the big thing for me.
Him in the top 5 all those categories last year when he had a bunch of absolute garbage trying to get
You're absolutely right, but that is one
He is one of the greats of all time, sure.
Yeah,
but Having said that, is it enough to not have him in your top five?
That's true, but you also consider, when you're looking at 8-4, when you're looking at the wins, and I don't want to say it's all because of this, but of course, you know, the defense is playing well, the offense is playing well, the whole team is playing well because of the Chuck Pagano story and rallying around him and playing with an extra bit of confidence. I don't want to say that they wouldn't be this good without that story, but I think, and I don't want to use that as an excuse for not having Luck in my top five, because that's what it kind of sounds like, but okay, I could put Andrew Luck in there over Calvin Johnson, and I wouldn't be too upset about it. But he's at your number three. Did you mention number four? That was RG3.
That's where, so I was number two. I've got is four. Brady. Yeah, I've got two Brady, three Luck, four RG3, and then five. You could take your pick between Rice and Ryan.
And that leaves one guy, the only man who's won four MVPs,
Carson Palmer. Exactly. Wait, you have somebody different. No, I'm sorry. I have different notes.
The man who's in the first has won four MVPs. It looks like he might win five this year. Of course, we're talking about Peyton Manning for the Denver Broncos. You can look at the stats here, and it says that the guy's second in pretty much everything. He's second in passer rating to different people in every one of these. Second in passing rating, second in completion percentage, second in touchdowns. This team is 9-3, have won seven straight, and I can't say this enough, the three teams that they lost to were Atlanta, New England, and Houston. So they've only lost to probably the three other teams in the league that they're competing with for best in the
league. And that was early in the year when they hadn't
exactly found
their groove
yet. Won seven in a row. He's turned Demaryius and Thomas into a top five receiver. He's turned Aaron Decker into maybe even a top 10, top 15 receiver the way he's playing. The guy just gets everyone involved, the tight ends, the running backs. Even with the loss of Willis McGahee, I don't see this team missing a ton, although Hillman isn't McGahee and the running game is a big part. But the fact is, Peyton has come in. He's given this team confidence. They actually deserve to make the playoffs this year, whereas last year they really didn't, even though they won the game. The defense is playing well, and it all goes back to Peyton Manning, every part of it.
The Denver Broncos are as consistent of a team as there is in the league. Mm-hmm. All of these other teams, all of these elite teams, and I don't know if we're putting Baltimore in that category, but you could certainly make the case at 9-3, sure. But I look at every other team that is looks very much like a Super Bowl contender, and none am I more confident week in and week out is going to score 30 points and hold its opponent to 23 or 17 or 14 every single week. Since that bye week, they went into that bye week, and you astutely mentioned that it was a terrible, slow-starting team, and if during that bye week they could figure out a way to just go out and play four quarters, they would be virtually unstoppable. Yep. And that's what they are at this point.
Yep.
And it does all get back to Peyton Manning. The defense, you can't look at a better example than the San Diego game, where they're down 24-0 and they come back, because that defense knows that if it gets Peyton Manning the ball back, he will win the game for them. And vice versa. Peyton knows that his defense is going to bail him out. It's just working. And when you talk about most valuable player, and again, you talk about, can we just throw somebody else in there? If you swap Philip Rivers and Peyton Manning, the Chargers have locked up the AFC West at this point, and the Broncos are sitting at 4-8. He's just far and away, he accounts for more wins than just about anybody, and that's why undisputedly, I think at this point, he's MVP, unless something crazy over the next month happens, but you can't really go wrong with any of these guys.
Yeah.
But again, that's why I like Andrew Luck so much, and RG3 for that matter. It's just, it's amazing to see what the product is now compared to what it is last year. Because we both watch a lot of football, and whether it's because we're paying attention to the spread or paying attention to the fantasy element, we've watched a lot of Colts and Redskins games from start to finish last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like pulling teeth. It's brutal. And now this year, you find those games, and it's pretty darn awesome.
It's absolutely unbelievable. Now that that is done, let's take a look at our picks. I am 21-14-4, 6-7 on upsets. You, sir, 17-22, 5-8.
Yeah, I forfeit. Whatever, dude.
I believe we both went 1-2 last week, so that could have been maybe your chance.
Whatever. Just take the title. It's fine. I'm over it.
We still have a month left.
I'm over it. Don't worry about it.
My first pick.
You take all the time on your picks, and I'll just take a nap.
My first pick is Cleveland. They're -6.5 at home against Kansas City, and I didn't think it'd be a time this year where I would give Cleveland a touchdown and take them, but that's what I'm doing right now, because I think the Chiefs, of course, they had the win last week against Carolina. It was extremely emotional win, of course, the day after the death of Jovan Belcher. Just a terrible story there. I think the Chiefs played – the Chiefs could have either, you know, played a terrible game and gotten blown out by Carolina, or they could have wound together, had a home emotional game and won that game. That's what they did.
Well, major props to the coaching staff. I mean, yeah. to have actually witnessed that.
Mm-hmm.
And then less than 48 hours later, you're coaching a football game. I can't even wrap my head around that.
Unreal. 24 hours later, I mean, it's unreal.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
Having said all of that, Kansas City is still, I think, the second worst offense in the league behind Arizona. And there's certainly some other offenses you can put out there.
No, that's a very fair. I think the Jets could get into that conversation, yeah. But no, that's
but
fair.
Either way, this offense is just terrible. And week in, week out, I've said Cleveland's defense is very underrated, very good. I like them a lot. I think Trent Richardson is going to have a field day on this running defense. I think he's going to have a great game. Cleveland won last week. They put together some great games. This is a solid team, even though they're at the bottom of the standings. I think that they go out and at home. I don't know if this team is even built to blow out a team even as bad as Kansas City, but I'm comfortable saying they're going to win this by 10.
Yeah, the problem here, I think you've been saying it all along with the defense, and we've talked about it. I talked a lot about how hard of a fighter Cleveland is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody's starting to catch on to that because they've actually put a couple wins together. They have been covering the spread like nobody's business over the last couple of seasons. But a 6.5-point favorite is so bizarre to see in front of their name. And I can't disagree with what you're saying. The only problem I have, like you said, one, they're not really built out. They're not really built to blow teams out. Like a 17-14 win here is very much within their comfort zone. The type of game that is never really in doubt, but that they always kind of, it's always within striking distance. But the other thing, Kansas City, this is an ideal spot for a letdown, so it could go that way. But Kansas City over the last couple weeks, I mentioned it last week when you took Carolina, that you look at Kansas City, they have Pittsburgh. Or against Pittsburgh, they had that great game.
Mm-hmm.
And then against Denver, they had a very strong game. That's the only game Denver's failed to score 30 points in its last 8 games.
Yeah.
And then last week, they have that win against Carolina. The last 4 weeks, they've played really hard. They don't look like a team that's just rolled over and died yet.
Definitely.
So if they go out and play their hardest against Cleveland, I think they can cover the spread.
That's fair.
But Cleveland is absolutely a touchdown better than this team, so we'll see how they play.
The second pick that I like is Atlanta. They're -3 at Carolina, and thankfully for me and my fantasy team, Cam Newton is finally putting it together. He's had back-to-back very good games. The bad news, unfortunately, though, is that it was against two very bad defenses. Atlanta's defense is not fantastic, but they're certainly a much bigger improvement. This one will probably be a shootout. That's what it was when they met in Atlanta. I think the final score was 24-23, so just on the outskirts of it. And that was in Atlanta, so this is going to be a tie. And Atlanta just plays close games, it seems like, no matter who they play up against. So -3 for them is actually a lot of points to give up, even against a team like Carolina. But I think considering this is probably going to be a shootout, like we said, I think Atlanta can probably put up 27 or 30 points. I think Carolina might just max out at 24, and it might just be that kind of one possession game. I like Atlanta to win this one, even though Cam Newton's been playing a lot better.
I think that's fair. My concern here, and the reason I'm probably going to end up taking Carolina, is the letdown factor for Atlanta. When you look at the season they've had to this point, it was never in doubt when the Saints got off to that 0-4 start. It was never in doubt they were going to win the division.
Yeah.
And Tampa Bay came on much to the surprise of just about everybody, but then they've tapered off a little bit now. So Atlanta was always going to win the South, but to do it by beating the Saints the way they did last week was a lot more important than I think people are giving it credit for, because they were going to win the division eventually anyway. But to actually take the crown from the Saints, to take that record away from Drew Brees,
one of his worst games of his career.
And that's the thing, 5 interceptions.
Should have been 6. One was called back for offsides.
And you're thinking if you didn't see the game, oh, it must have been some tipped balls. It was just a bad game, but credit to Atlanta for forcing that game. To have such an incredible game, a changing of the guard, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying New Orleans isn't going to bounce back next year, but that's how I'd be talking about it in the Atlanta locker room if I were them. You win the division. Not only that, but unlike the AFC, where it's a pretty crazy race for that second bye, Atlanta's pretty much got the one seed locked up out in the NFC. It doesn't look like anybody else is going to get there, so they're not going to take a game off against the division rival, but considering how incredible last week was, in prime time no less, I just kind of feel like this would be a good spot for them to cough up their second game of the year. But on paper, getting Atlanta minus three against Carolina.
My last pick is Seattle. They're minus 10 at home against Arizona, and I don't even care that Brandon Brower has dropped his appeal and is serving his four-game suspension. Have you heard about Sherman yet? I actually haven't heard officially if he's going to be...
No, I think he was going to play this week and that he's putting off his appeal, but it's one of those things. It's funny to me that a suspension can be decided by the player.
Yeah, it's like, I'll serve that later.
So that sounds... I feel you. I feel you, League. Adderall is a big deal, but I'm going to play this one.
Yeah,
and
you don't mind.
I just don't really understand but okay.
I don't care if both of them miss this game. Arizona, as I mentioned, is the worst offense in the league, I think. I mean, you have three interceptions, I think, in the first quarter, at the very least the first half against Sanchez last week, and you only muster up 6 points, and you lose the game 7-6. That is just inexcusable. When your defense holds a team to 7 points, you have to win 100% of the time. That's just pretty much... bottom line. This offense is absolutely terrible. In Seattle, even without these two corners, is a very solid offense. We don't even have to talk about the incredible home advantage. I think at a 10-point spread, I think if Seattle scores 20, at most 23 points here, they get a cover. So I think even at 10 points, they do that. 23-10, somewhere in there, I think they easily cover its 10 points. But
yeah, God, 10 points is a lot. 10 points is a lot, especially for Seattle, which, I mean, Seattle's offense isn't going to fool you, and Arizona's defense...
It's still solid.
Arizona's defense is strong. And they've been giving up around 24 points a game, but that's because they get three and out at every freaking drive.
Exactly.
So I think Arizona can keep Seattle to 17 points, 20 points. And you even said 20 points. And that's the thing. Does Arizona get to 13? I don't know. Seattle is just so dominant at home, though. Yeah, it's just exactly. No matter what the spread is, they just find a way to cover it at home. Then they go on the road and lose to Miami, and then beat Chicago. I don't have the slightest idea what to expect from them on the road. At home, they tend to get it done. But 10 points, that's actually a pretty bold pick, because I think it's going to end up being like 20 to 13 or something. Yeah. I mean, you'd like to see it around 7 points, but I guess that's the price you pay for taking a team that, like you said, lost a game. They only give up 7 points.
Yeah, that's unreal. My upset, there wasn't a ton of picks that I love, so I'm going to go with my upset reliable team, which is St. Louis. I think I'm 2-0 with picking them with upsets this year, even though both those games are at home. This is at Buffalo, but Buffalo is just, they're a bad team, pretty much.
You weren't impressed by that win over Jacksonville? That doesn't turn the tides for you?
No, I don't at all. I thought that they might have lost that game. I didn't really pay attention to it. I was going through our picks because I think that was in your picks last week, and I was just like, oh, that was a loss for sure.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I actually had Jacksonville +6. I was really happy about that one, and that didn't work out for me.
Anyways, just going to this matchup, I mean, St. Louis, amazingly, I don't think they really have a shot, but they actually are in somewhat of the thick of the wild card race for them with their record. And, you know, I like Sam Bradford. He has some young weapons on his offense, and Buffalo's defense is just absolutely terrible. This actually could potentially be a shootout because there's two solid offenses here. Defenses aren't that great. As far as an upset is concerned, even though it's on the road, I'll go with St. Louis, who, as I mentioned, have the inspiration and motivation of having the wild card in their minds. Buffalo really has nothing to play for left in the season. I think St. Louis could pull this off.
Speaking of how pathetic it was that Arizona doesn't win, giving up 7 points, how pathetic is it that I, picking the Jets minus 4.5, last week, can't get a win when I only give up 6 points.
Yeah, unreal.
I saw when it went final, and my eye first glanced Arizona 6. I pumped my fist. I was like, come on, baby, that's what I'm talking about. It's got to be at least 13-6, right? Yeah. No such luck for me. St. Louis Buffalo, I think, is a very even matchup, so I think it's a pretty good spot to take an upset. I'd actually like to see St. Louis win this one because they have played so much better at home than they have on the road.
Yeah.
This is a winnable game for them, even on the road, so it'd be nice to see them take that stride forward. Not that I'm a Rams fan, but it's a pretty exciting young team this year. They've taken some strides, and they've played some pretty cool games, so I'd like to see that for their sake. I'm a lot more interested in them than Buffalo. Buffalo had its moment at the beginning of last year. We gave them their due.
Yeah, they beat New England.
They beat New England, and then they got Ryan Fitzpatrick's back, and now, you know, whatever. So
give Buffalo credit, though. They know how to draft running backs.
That's
they
true. Had, they had Mark That's Scott true. Lynch. That's true. To be fair, C.J. Spiller
absolutely
doesn't deserve to be brushed off.
Had Marshawn Lynch, and then they got rid of him.
And they are. They've got C.J. Spiller, but that's really the only reason to tune in. And he didn't even make your MVP list. So. okay, on to my picks. Speaking of MVPs, let's get into my picks. Now, all right, I'm not one to say, you know, I'm going to retire or whatever. Fine, but honestly, this has been a terrible year for philosophy picks. If the Baltimore Ravens don't beat the Washington Redskins this week, I don't know what to do with myself anymore. Now, it actually would make perfect sense. It would make perfect sense for Washington to win the game because they have RG3. Yeah. Baltimore struggled against the run. Washington's at home. They've won three straight, blah, 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 blah. There are multiple elements that I have just destroyed spreads with for years in the past. Now I'm washed up for some reason, even though I'm using the same system that's worked for the last 6 years. Whatever.
There's game changes, man. Ones. Game changes.
I guess so. And just like the game has passed Monty Kiffin by, passed me by too, because I'm just lost at this point. But you look at Washington, there's a couple things here. As a general rule, if you beat your division rival on Monday Night Football, I'm expecting a letdown from you the following week. Now, when it's an awesome game like Monday night's was, and it's a fourth quarter comeback, and there's all that emotion, I'm going to go ahead and say it's even more likely that you have a downswing. Now, another one, not only is it tough to come off of a Monday night game against a division opponent, to play three straight division opponent games, and then to play a game for a team out of your conference,
okay,
that's about as big of a letdown spot as it gets. Because generally speaking, when you're going up against a division rival, and you're not the Oakland Raiders, when you're going up against a division rival, and you've actually got a pulse,
you get up
for those games. Yeah. You get up for Philadelphia, no matter how bad they are. That Dallas game was huge when they won it. They beat the Giants. They not only play three division rivals, they beat three division rivals. Where's the energy coming from in this game? It's easy to look at the X's and O's, but sometimes you just have to say, this team is going to have a bum week. And where is the energy coming from after the last 3 weeks? Baltimore, how on earth, I think you were tweeting about it, how on earth does Baltimore, with a chance to just lock up the North, they're still going to win it anyway, how did they let Pittsburgh, now Pittsburgh might make the playoffs, you could have essentially put them out. Even if Baltimore wins the division, which I still think they will, now you got Pittsburgh to deal with potentially in the playoffs. How do you let that happen at home with Charlie Batch?
You lose to Charlie Batch at home. When was the last time that happened in the NFL?
1994. I would take the under 97. I mean, so you have that game, and you've got Ed Reed talking smack. I mean. Yeah. Oh, man, you want to get back on the field and just crush somebody. So, putting all that together, throwing X's and O's to hell, if Baltimore doesn't win this game, again, I just have completely lost it, because this is as philosophy-ish of a philosophy pick as there has ever been.
Okay.
Scene,
yeah, I was going to say, how do I respond to that? Yeah, I agree. Let's go. no, I mean, I guess I'll make arguments then for
why don't you speak in reason, because I'm speaking in riddles.
Baltimore's running defense has struggled this year much more than they have in the past. That's been their strength in the past. It's not necessarily anymore. Alfred Morris is out there, and he could have a big game against this team. Washington, I understand what you're saying about not having the motivation for this as your divisional rivals, but let's look at the fact
that they've definitely got motivation.
They're 6-6, and they're one game out of their division, so this is a big game that they could they should win.
Well, they do. I think they do.
That's fair. And I don't know if it's a must win, but that's 6-6.
They should be looking at it that way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, for Baltimore, I still don't know how they lose that last week, and I agree with you. I think that they probably could use that for motivation. I don't really know on this game, actually. As of right now...
I convinced you, didn't I? You like it. You
as
like,
of right
like
now, I'm leaning towards Baltimore. I have to agree. All but right. It's tough. I could make an argument for Washington, but for my fantasy team, I need Ray Rice to have a big game, so let's go with that.
It's two great teams. It should actually be a really good game. I hope both teams show up to the best of their ability, because it should be a great game. But Baltimore has to find a way to win it. Green Bay, -6.5 against Detroit. I was stunned. I was writing an article for this game, and I knew about Green Bay's recent dominance over Detroit. I knew that they were 13-1
I saw these stats
up.
Online.
I knew that they were 13-1 straight up and 10-4 ATS against the Detroit Lions over the last 14 games, which that's just 7 years of dominance.
Yeah.
What I hadn't seen or heard anyone talking about, and maybe they are and I just didn't see it, was when I pulled up, there's a nice little feature on oddsshark.com where you can pull up in the database specific teams and trends, and you can say, okay, let's see how this team fared against this team at home, etc. And I said, all right, let's see how Green Bay has done in their last 20 games at home against Detroit. 20-0. That can't be right. That can't be right. That has to be a typo, doesn't it? I check. Sure enough, 20-0. You have to go you have to go back 22 years. 22 years.
It's almost as old as we are.
We were just walking around. I don't even want to think about. I always say, like, little kids. Tangent here. Just little kids, when they're that age, they're just always looking for ways to off themselves. You know, you don't know any better. You run out in traffic.
Yeah.
You stick your finger in an electrical socket. You know, we were not ready to understand that you shouldn't off yourself yet. The last time the Detroit Lions went into Green Bay and beat the Packers. 21-0, 14-5-2 against the spread. Now, I don't care about trends generally because teams change from year to year, and this Detroit team, well, last year's Detroit team was one of the best, but how can you ignore something that's lasted over two decades? Green Bay has just completely dominated the Lions, and honestly, the Lions have actually played some really tough games over the last four games. You could argue they deserve to win all of them. You could make that argument. They are 1-3 against the spread in those four games because they can't get the job done, and whatever it's been, whether it was those Andrew Luck heroics or Green Bay ended up coming back and then kicking that field goal to cover the spread, it's always something. They've lost four straight games. They're 4-8 now. At some point, I think the fighting stops, and I think that Luck drive at the end of that game might be the dagger on this team. I'm not saying you're not going to get up for a division rivalry game, but I just don't know what you're going into Lambeau with right now. Green Bay, meanwhile, tied with Chicago at 8-4, obviously needs this game. And all that aside, X's and O's, I think Green Bay can beat this team by 7 points anyway. So, huge trend, recent and historical, Green Bay has dominated this team. And I just like the Packers to have a complete game and win it something like 28-17.
Yeah, you know, going into last year when the Lions were playing really well, we were trying to figure out who was the team that would beat Green Bay. Remember last year they were 13-0, and Green Bay, or I'm sorry, and Detroit was one of the big teams that we came up with. But since last year, if you look at it, I mean, they lost 27-15 last year to them. They lost 45-41 in the last game of the season, which wasn't even Aaron Rodgers; it was Matt Flynn who was going off on them. And then this year was 24-20. So on paper, all those games have been fairly close, but if you actually watch the games, as I recall, I don't know if Detroit really ever had a solid lead in any of those games. Maybe the 45-41 one, but no one cared about that because Aaron Rodgers wasn't playing.
Right.
I remember last year, for sure on Thanksgiving, Green Bay was dominating. Sue stepped on the guy, got kicked out, and that game was never even close.
You know, that old chestnut. Yeah. Sue doing something stupid.
Yeah, and then this year it was close, but I just think that the Packers have their number, and they're a better team than Detroit. And the big thing for Detroit, really, is that they've literally had no running game all season long. As solid as LeSure has been to step in, for this offense to be lethal and be extremely effective, they have to have a running game so that Stafford doesn't have to throw the ball 70 times a game. So for those reasons, yeah, I agree. I think especially at home for Green Bay, they have a lot more to play for. I think that they probably win this game by 10 or 14. So
I mean, to be fair, Detroit over the last four games, they've been losing games by 3 or 4. So 6.5 points is a lot to cover, but it's in Green Bay, and I just... I think since that Detroit, the one that bothered me the most on Detroit's losing streak was that game against Minnesota, mm-hmm. because they had strung a couple wins together. We were actually talking about them maybe getting back into the hunt a little bit in the playoffs. I think they were 4-4 at that point.
Yeah.
And then they go into Minnesota and just have that complete dud of a game.
Yeah.
And since then, it's just nothing's really worked, and there's all this Sue attention in the media, whether it's fair or unfair. It's just, I think it's about time Detroit rolls over, so hopefully it's this week. Mm-hmm. And lastly, as far as spread picks are concerned, Thursday night's game, Denver -10 at Oakland. I don't even really need to go into this one. We were already talking about how consistent Denver is. They just score 31 to 34 points every game.
Mm-hmm.
They give up at max 23 points every game.
Mm-hmm.
They're a model of consistency, and that's against solid opponents. Yeah. The Raiders, not only are they pitiful, but they, more than any other team that I've seen this year, I can't find another team, maybe you can correct me on this, that has shown less fight. No other team, as bad as the Chiefs are, they've shown fight.
Yeah.
Cleveland's bad, they've shown fight. Jacksonville's bad, they took Houston to overtime.
Yeah.
The Jets, but the Jets are bad. The Raiders, 0-5 straight up and against the spread over the last 5 weeks. They're giving up 40 points a game over the last 5 weeks. They're scoring 14 to 17 points per game. It's just pathetic across the board. And it's the type of team that around this time of year I love. This is actually, I can't believe I'm taking a 10-point road favorite in a division rivalry game. I mean, this is as anti-philosophy as it gets. But I've just seen nothing in the Oakland Raiders. It doesn't even look like the guys... I'll say this about the Philadelphia Eagles. They don't look like a team.
Yeah.
But they do look like a bunch of guys that are playing for jobs. Yeah. The Raiders don't even look like they want jobs anymore. No, it's just hopeless.
I don't know if you saw... I definitely tweeted. I don't know if I Facebooked it. But I remember watching the afternoon games on Sunday. And I tweeted that with all due respect or lack thereof to the Chiefs and the Cardinals... And I didn't mention the Eagles, but they're obviously in there. I think that the Raiders might be the worst team in football.
I think so, 100%.
Because if you just look at their last four games, like they lost in a shootout to Tampa Bay, 42-32, that's fine.
And that they were down 17 at the beginning of the fourth quarter,
too. So, okay, you look at their last four games, 55-20 against Baltimore, 38-17 against New Orleans, 34-10 against Cincinnati. So three straight blowouts. Then you finally face a not so great team in Cleveland,
a team that's lost 12 straight on the road.
And it's you lose 20-17, and it was only because of a late fourth quarter touchdown. It was even that close. This team, you said, they're showing no heart. They're showing no fight. They're just bad at every aspect. I don't see them winning a game the rest of the season, and they still play the Chiefs and the Chargers. I don't see. I mean,
They might beat the Chiefs. They might.
That's the problem. They might beat the Chiefs.
They might beat the Chiefs is absolutely a problem. But it's actually amazing when you look at when I was coming into this year. This was back when we thought the AFC West might be a race. We said if Peyton Manning's back, Denver KU runs away with it, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
But we didn't know the other three teams were going to be so useless either. But when you look at the Raiders' last seven games, it actually looked pretty good from the perspective of if they could survive the early part of their schedule. Jacksonville, you play against Jacksonville, you play against Cleveland, you play against Cincinnati, you play against Carolina. Kansas City, San Diego, Carolina. These are all games at home against Denver.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like if they, again, got through 4-4-ish, they could maybe finish strong. And now they're playing all these teams and just getting beat by them. It's embarrassing as a fan because, again, it's one of those things where you're watching it and you'd like to see something. You'd like to see somebody that looks like he's going hard on every down. It's a problem. My buddy Sam was saying, because we watch the games every week or as much as we can take of them, and it's hard to see what kind of a coach Dennis Allen is at this point because the personnel is so bad. But it's just not reassuring, again, that you have so many teams. This is still the NFL.
Yeah.
So you know, when they got crushed by Baltimore, I said, you watch, they're going to bounce back against New Orleans. Completely destroyed. You watch, they're going to bounce back against Cincinnati. Completely destroyed. It's just not there. So if Denver doesn't win this game by 10, I'd be shocked. Okay. I would be very genuinely shocked. And all it would do would screw me out of another podcast pick, because it's not going to do the Raiders any good at this point. And lastly, straight upset. And
bold upset. 10-1 team.
Hold on. It's 11-1. I actually was going to say, going into New England is tough, but I mean, Houston is a great road team, too. I've got Houston over New England. Bold upset pick. You took the Cleveland Browns against the Raiders last week.
Okay.
Of all the bold upset picks in the world.
Okay. What's more ridiculous, picking a bad team to beat a worse team or picking the best team in football to beat New England?
Are the Houston Texans the best team?
They're 11-1.
Are they the best team in football?
By record, they are.
By record, they are. You just said, are they the best team in football?
I don't think they are, but by record, they're 11-1. How are you picking 11-1 team as an upset?
Well, because they're a 4-point underdog.
That's unreal.
I mean, do you? Well, what do you think is going to happen in this game?
I think Houston is probably going to win.
You think so? I mean, the thing about this game, when you look at it, I think obviously New England, I mean, both these teams come in with a 6-game winning streak. Mm-hmm. New England's offense is incredible, obviously. Last week, bit of a roadblock against Miami. But yeah, I think the deciding factor here, when you consider how good of a road team Houston is, New England's home advantage shouldn't play in too much. It really comes down to defense for me, and Houston has a considerably better defense, in my opinion. So I actually think Houston wins this game. I was going to say I'm surprised it's an upset, but then New England is really playing well, too. What would you set the spread at right now if you were a bookmaker? You wouldn't have New England -3 at home? I mean, all things considered, if it's about equal...
I would honestly, as much as of a cop out, I guess, I would honestly make this a pick 'em game. I really think that's not
a cop out at all. That's fair. I would make New England a 3-point favorite at home. If it were in Houston, I'd make them a 3-point favorite.
I think what could happen with this game is, you know, a lot of people think that J.J. Watt has already locked up Defensive Player of the Year, which very well could happen, but Alden Smith, of course, is making an argument for there. I think J.J. Watt could solidify his status as the best defensive player in this game if he's able to get pressure on Brady, get a couple sacks. As we know, that's always what we say when it comes to beating Tom Brady, get pressure on him. J.J. Watt's going to be up in his face. More importantly, I think he's going to tip a lot of passes, especially because Brady loves to go in the middle to Welker. I'm sure that they're going to plan to put – I think it would be a really good idea to put J.J. Watt on the side wherever Wes Welker is. Because you know that all he does is run the curl in the middle for 5 yards and passing it yards after the catch. If Watt is there, it's deflected. He could get 5-6 deflections in this game. I think that could be a huge factor for them. More importantly, as you mentioned, in the game that is going to be a shootout-ish, I think there's going to be some good defenses here. And I don't think either team scores over 30. I think it's going to be in the area of 27-21, 24 in that area. But I just think that Houston can make more big plays and maybe force a couple turnovers, even against Tom Brady, that New England can't against Houston.
Yeah, so it's obviously the game of the week.
No question.
It's on Monday night. It should be another great, great one. Game.
Yeah.
And so hopefully Houston will win it for me.
So let's just jump in my fantasy players real quick. Again, I just got a couple of guys for you, and now we're in the playoffs for a lot of the leagues, so this is really
good. So now stuff's on the line here. Yeah, you can't just start throwing out bum picks.
No, and so there's one guy who I love this week. He's a guy we've mentioned a few times on the podcast. I don't think I've mentioned him in this segment yet, specifically, maybe once, but Vic Ballard, 43% owned for the Indianapolis Colts. Donald Brown is out for this game. The offense is absolutely cruising, and the most important factor of anything is that Tennessee is giving up the most points on the season to running backs. So because of that, I expect Vic Ballard to just have an absolute, maybe not a monster game like the Arian Foster type game at 25, but he should put up 15-17 for you, be a big part of this offense. A game that I expect the Colts to win, and win fairly handily, actually. So I think if they have a big lead, that's another thing. He could get a lot of touches. I think he's going to get a good number of points for you and a lot of touches, and I love Ballard this week.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's a good chance they're leading in this game, and he gets a lot of carries late. There's also a solid chance that it ends up being a shootout type of game, and they're obviously going to want to keep the defense honest by getting him involved. Anytime you can spot third somebody against a defense like Tennessee's, you're not in bad shape.
The second guy that I like is Chris Givens, and he's a receiver for the Rams, and I'm a little surprised that he's only 26% owned, because this guy in the last 3 weeks has put up solid numbers, double digit in all three, and last week 14 targets from Sam Bradford, which is good for any receiver, let alone a guy like Chris Givens. And you have to feel for Danny Amendola. I mean, the guy has been hurt. He was hurt all of last season, you know, dislocated his shoulder earlier in the year, was out, finally came back last week, and now he's in a walking boot. I mean, the guy just can't seem to stay healthy. So if he's out, specifically Givens will get even more looks. Even with Amendola in the game, I still love Givens to get 10 probably to targets. And as you mentioned before, I like St. Louis to win this game against Buffalo. Buffalo's secondary doesn't scare anybody in the world. I think Givens should have a good game here. Again, probably gets in the area of 15, 16 points, depending on if he finds the end zone or not.
Yeah, Sam Bradford, for a young quarterback, does a great job of going through his progressions. Yeah. And that's why, you know, when these defenses are honing in on Amendola, he's going to give Givens 14 looks, and this week shouldn't be any different. And the problem for Buffalo is, even when you're honing in on somebody, it's kind of hard to tell. So I think everybody for St. Louis will have a big day. I'm not sure St. Louis is going to win that game, but I think we both agree neither offense should have much trouble in that one. So that does it for us this week. If you are listening right now, that means that the podcast went up. I once again apologize to you, KT, and to everybody for last week's antics. But we are back, and hopefully we can finish the season strong without any more nonsense. As always, you can email me at vegasdavesdime@gmail.com.
Or me at kevinjtay@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can check out this podcast and all things sports at sportsinvasion.net.
Thank you guys for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.